Appreciate the song service tonight. It's a blessed thing when the songs can be sung and people are together. And the timing is what it ought to be. But I took note, pondering what we would maybe speak on just a little bit, and had thought about something, but the songs tonight have an element in them that I think is common in each and every one of them. It's an element of choice. We sung about his yoke being easy and his burden is light, but it said they tried the road of sin and found that all of his prospects deceived. Then somewhere in that person's life, they made a change. And they chose to follow Jesus and to try him. And it said that they proved the Lord, and joys abounded more than they could believe. The next songwriter, the next page there, said something about yes, and in that, there has to be something that establishes why they did. And in doing that, they said something about, I will walk the downward road no longer. I made another choice. Thank the Lord for keeping grace. And the writer says, I'm not ever going back. I've made my choice. This is the way I'm going. I won't ever go back to that way again. And the other one said, well, within my heart was fond ambition. Everybody grows up with some type of ambition, some type of desire. For many, reality sets in, and what they once thought they would pursue, they never have gone after. I think sometimes about some of my elementary school classmates, and I remember one, his name was Thornton Clark. He wanted to be an oceanographer. Wanted to go to Florida State. This was in the sixth grade. But you know where he ended up? He's still in Wichita. On drugs. Smart young man. Seemed to have had a lot going for him. Very nice family, very nice mother and father. They could have afforded to send him to Florida State. But he got caught up in the wrong element and never pursued what he said he wanted to do when we were in sixth grade. Others have come along the way and met some of those things as well. But after the pursuit of all of that, they still realize that there's an emptiness there that's unfilled, even though they had high aims. And then you think about, I'm filled with grace and glory, and in Jesus I abide. Even in that song, you see an element of choice, because it said, one time I did roam in sinful pleasures, over mountain, hill, and plain, looking everywhere for that which satisfied and yet could find none. And then they said, oh, the cross. That's where I counted all but loss. That's where they made a choice. Not a likely place to make a choice, because that's a place that people like to get away from. And then it says, well, there's one thing I can do. I'm going to cling to you, Lord. I'm still choosing. Many people have had the opportunity to make choice, and I just kind of pondered, I don't know what you would say, but somewhere in your life, you've had to make some choices. Some of them weren't very easy to make. What kind of choices have you had to make? I can say that sometimes you may be real young and have to make choices. I remember I had a girlfriend in high school. She was a Southern Baptist, but she was living in what she knew and understood, and so was I. But we had an interest in each other. She even slipped out and came to our meeting. Her parents didn't know where she's going. Had her father found out, he'd have raised the roof off the house. But you know, she at first felt like that's the way she was going to go. But there were some things that happened, nothing bad, just some conversation we had, and I remember the Lord finally letting me know, you either speak now or forever hold your peace. You either get out of it now, was really what he was telling me, or forever hold your peace. Had to make a choice. I remember in college, the track coach at Wichita State University was well known enough nationally that he was one of the coaches for the Olympic team when they were running in Mexico and other places during the Olympics. And one day he asked me to come out for the team. I had to make a choice. And I told him no. I remember when I was in junior high school, some called me the 440 man. He even told me, said, you're probably going to get to be famous running. Now, at 14, you can have some pretty idealistic views. I could do a little running. I don't think I had Olympic caliber ability. But I never did find out what the depths of my abilities were either. And I've had some people ask me, well, what was the fastest quarter mile you ever ran? And I've told them the fastest was 49.9 seconds. There were others that could probably run, but at that time we could outrun some of the college teams there in Wichita. Yeah. And some of them, one of them from Friends University would come over to our high school to run on our track. And one day they wanted to challenge our mile relay team, and I was the leadoff man for that. But then when they found out how fast we could run, they backed out. But you know, when you look upon it, you realize that this really isn't the way to go. And I've got to make some decisions and do some choosing. Am I going to really live for the Lord, or am I going to just kind of go along? And you know, people make those choices many times, day in and day out, without realizing that some of the smallest or less meaningful choices have a great impact on the rest of your life. But you know, you can make the right choice. You can make some choices that are not so good. And I've been able to look, and sometimes I've had to just thank the Lord and say, Lord, you really just helped me in spite of myself. Because if you'd have just allowed me to go on and make the choices that I was endeavoring to make, I wouldn't be here today. And when I say that, I don't mean here in this pulpit, but I mean just being saved. So, as you go along this pathway of life, remember your choices are going to have an effect upon you and some other people too. You may not think about it later on, but the effect will be there. Lot made a choice, did he not? And that seemed like it's a bad choice, doesn't it? But when you look there in the 13th chapter of Genesis, I'm going to pick up at the 10th verse. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Lot made a seemingly a good choice. I need land, I need pasture, I need water for all of my cattle, and this looks like it will meet the need. And so he chose. He was given that opportunity to choose, and he did. But you know the results of that choice. He didn't get to keep all of it, did he? And after choosing that and gaining all of this cattle and growing while he was with his uncle Abram, he lost it all. Lost every bit of it. And lost his wife along with it. Lost his sons-in-laws. But he made the choice. It looked good. But it wasn't the right one. Abram made a choice as well. He could have just told Lot, well, we need to separate. We're brethren. We shouldn't be striving. And he could have just said, I'm going this way, so you go the other way. And back in that time, had he done that, Lot would have obeyed. But Abram made the choice of letting his nephew choose first. And it looks like he got the short end of that stick. And then the Lord tells him, look out, north, east, south, and west. Walk in the length of it. Walk in the breadth of it. I'm going to give all of it to you and to your seed forever. And he gave it to him. And Abraham took it by faith. Because he didn't get to dwell in it. It was given to the children of Israel when they came over to the Canaan land. Years and years and years after he was dead and gone. That don't look like such a good choice, does it? But yet, that is what took place. Another person made a choice in the 16th chapter of Judges. Now, I think about this man every so often because it somewhat amazes me that he could be the way he was and yet be a judge in Israel. Judges, the 16th chapter, verses 4 and 5. And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and said unto her, entice him, and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him, and we will give thee, every one of us, 1,100 pieces of silver. You know the ending of that. We drop down to the 15th verse there. And she said unto him, how canst thou say I love thee, when thine heart is not with me?
Thou hast mocked me these three times.
Three times?
And hast not told me wherein thy great
strength. You're holding back on me.
Strength lieth. And it came to pass,
yes,
she pressed him daily,
all right,
through words, and urged him, so that
his soul was vexed
unto death.
All right.
That he told her all his heart,
yes,
and said unto her, there hath not come
a razor
upon my head,
mm-hmm,
for I have been a
Nazarite
unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaved, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man.
Read down through verse 20.
And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he hath shown me all his heart.
Yes.
Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and
brought money
in their hand.
Hmm.
And she made him sleep upon her knees.
Yes.
And she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the 7 locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "The Philistines be upon thee, Samson." And he awoke out of his sleep and said, "I will go out as other times before and shake myself." And he was not that the Lord was departed from him.
All right. Samson made a choice. But there's something about this that shows he was headed for trouble before he got to this point. He was one of those sons who desired a certain woman, but his parents weren't pleased with it because she was not an Israelite. God had given the Israelites command way back in Moses' time, certain people you're not to marry. But he said, "It pleased me." Yet he was one of the judges. And it tells me that no matter how high up a person may get, in God even, they can still make choices that can cause them to lose out. And he made the choice of now settling in with this woman. The first one that he was after, things happened and he ended up not having her. Now he's made another choice. And then she begins to try to find out, where's your strength lie? Now, when you look upon that, you see that happening many a times. People will begin to try to find out about you. I remember a co-worker of mine, he would go out once in a while, hit the bars, and he said sometimes ladies would come up, "Can I sit with you?" "Yeah, okay." Then they want to know, "What do you do?" He tell them, "Well, I'm a journeyman mechanic." "Oh." And when he was telling me about it, I said, "Yeah, and you can see the dollar signs rolling up in their eyes, couldn't you?" Then they wanted him to buy them a drink. Then they wanted to find out some more. And when he began to see that and reason it out, he would tell them later on when he'd go out, they want to know what you do. He said, "Ma'am, I'm just a step away from welfare myself." And when he told them that, they'd move on to the next one. They wouldn't stay. He knew what they were after. It happens from time to time. And you have to make some choices. It also makes me think sometimes about a comment Brother Theodore McCrae said. He used to teach Bible study there in Wichita. And he made a comment one time and he said, "If you don't want somebody to know something, you just better not tell it to anybody. You better keep it to yourself." Well, Samson didn't really want his enemies to know his strength, and he should have kept it to himself. But he stayed around. So he made a choice to keep staying there, and she kept pressing him. And I would just have to feel like, yeah, he thought like many men do, "Oh, but this is my baby, and she won't do me no harm." And look what happened. And not only that, after she did that, she afflicted him. And he didn't realize that the Lord had departed from him. Now, you know the end of that story. They put out his eyes. They made fun of him. They ridiculed him. They used him as a slave. They used bound him to the wheel and they'd have him pushing it so that they could grind their meal. And of course, they were rejoicing in their so-called God that he's given us victory over our enemies. The point there is that it's obvious choices can have a pretty detrimental effect upon you. They can also have a very good effect. But let's look at someone else in 2 Chronicles, the first chapter. This person had opportunity to make a choice. I tend to say he was given a blank check. And he was told, "You can fill in the numbers. And I'll back it up." So we find here in 2 Chronicles, the first chapter.
And Solomon, the son of David was strengthened in his kingdom.
Yes.
And the Lord his God
was with him
and magnified him exceedingly.
All right, hold it there. God was with him.
Yes.
Blessed him in ways that nobody else has ever really been blessed. He was David's son. That God had made some promises to David concerning his posterity and someone being from that lineage able to sit on the throne. And now Solomon is the one who is sitting in his place. Now drop down to the sixth verse and read through verse 12.
And Solomon went up thither to the
brazen altar.
Brazen altar before the Lord, which was at the tabernacle of the congregation, and offered 1,000 burnt offerings upon it.
That's a lot.
And that night did God appear unto Solomon,
yes,
and said unto him, Take what I give, no, ask what I shall give thee.
Yes.
And Solomon said unto God, Thou hast shown
great mercy
unto David, my father, and has made me to reign
in his stead. Yes.
Now, O Lord God, let thy promise unto David my father be established.
Yes.
Thou hast made me king over a people like the dust of the earth in multitude.
Yes.
Give me now wisdom and knowledge that I may go out and come in before this people.
Yes.
For who can judge this thy people that is so great? And God said unto Solomon, Because this was in thine heart,
mm-hmm,
and thou hast not asked riches, wealth,
or
honor, nor the life of thine
enemies, yes,
neither yet hath asked long life,
mm-hmm,
but hath asked wisdom and knowledge for thyself, that thou mayest judge my people over whom I have made thee king.
Yes.
Wisdom and knowledge is granted unto thee. And I will give thee riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings have had that have been
before thee.
Before thee, neither shall there be
any.
Neither shall
mm-hmm
there.
That's correct.
Any after thee have the like.
All right. Nobody else is going to have this. The kings that came before you, including your own father, are not going to, haven't had what you're going to have. And those that come after you are not going to have it. And it was true. Those kings that came after him, they never amassed the wealth, the stature, the position, the calm, and the peace within the kingdom that Solomon had. But he was given this opportunity, ask what I shall give you. And he could have asked for a whole lot of things. And all he wanted was the wisdom to be able to walk circumspectly before the people, to go in and come out, to live before them in a way that was befitting of a king. And the Lord lets him know, because you asked for that, because you chose wisdom and understanding, because you looked for that instead of the riches. He could have asked for riches. He could have asked for long life, that I'll be able to reign for a long time. When you look, it many times tells you how many years these different kings in Israel and Judah reigned. Some of them only reigned for a while. Some of them reigned for maybe 30 to 40 years. Some of them, one of them was made king when he was 7 years old. But he didn't get to live for years on end. Solomon could have asked for that, but he didn't. He could have asked for the wealth and the honor. Those are the kind of things that Satan tries to offer to people. If you bow down to me, I'll give you all of this. Now there's a choice to be made. But Solomon didn't want that. That wasn't primary in his choice. So the Lord told him, I'm going to give that to you anyway. But it was also based upon the condition that he would continue to walk in the statutes that God had given to his father. So he still had to make a daily choice that I'm going to keep going that way. But you know, in all his wisdom, in all his effort to find out things, he didn't continue that choice. Solomon was the one who really broke through. David, his father, brought in horses when God had told him way back when they came out of Egypt, don't bring in horses to yourself. Nothing wrong with horses. But horses were the means of battle back then. You might say horses and chariots were kind of like we are today, where we have the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter and the cruise missiles and those kind of things. That was the cutting edge technology back then. But God told them, I don't want you to have horses and chariots. It was so that they would trust in him when it came time to fight battles. But David brought some in. And then Solomon opened up the door and really brought in the horses and the chariots. That wasn't what he was supposed to do. Solomon was the one who married all these different women. And they turned his heart towards all of these other things. So when we look upon this, we make choices, but then you have to maintain that choice by continually walking in the ways of the Lord, by continually making that decision. You and I can make the choice that today I'm going to live and serve God. And tomorrow the devil will be right back there saying, I got something, I'll trade you for that. And you're going to have to choose again. No, I choose to serve the Lord. And he'll come back the next day or a few days later and he'll have something else to offer you. And you still have to choose to serve God. When we maintain that choice, we come out in a wealthy place. Many times, though, people want to make a choice and let that be the end of it. It doesn't work that way. We have to keep choosing. We have to keep that effort up. And I've found that sometimes some that are younger and even in the middle age, they'll say, well, you know, I had to do this and I had to do that. When am I going to get to the place where this will never affect and bother me anymore? And you tell them, you won't get to that place because you have to keep making a choice. You have to keep exercising that choice. You can't just say, okay, I made this decision and now I don't ever have to deal with it anymore. I made a choice as to whom I would marry and hold in a certain place and not allow anybody else to get in that place. But that doesn't mean that I haven't had some offers to try to make a change. And you have to let them know, no. Some people are resorting to other things, and I'm just going to be plain. Some say, well, I'll wear the ring, and if people know I'm married, that will not protect you from the choice you've made. And I've seen some who wear them, and they've been told, that doesn't mean nothing to me. See, that's not where it's at. It's down in here. And if you carry yourself in the proper fashion, they'll know, and they'll get the message. That doesn't mean some of them won't still try. As I've told my children, what looks good to you looks good to somebody else. It doesn't matter whether they're saved or not saved. They see a person that's trying to make it in this life, that's trying to do the right thing, that's trying to work and get somewhere, that looks good to everybody. And they'll decide, I think I want him. I want her. And they'll start to try to see what they can do to get them. And you just have to let them know, I'm not for sale. I don't do that. And move on your way. Making those choices, they have to be maintained by more choices, by reinforcing of those choices, to where the pattern is consistent and is steady. And you know, you do that, you won't have to deal with it very often. You won't have to deal with it very often. But that doesn't mean Satan's not going to try to tempt people along those lines. Because he will. May the Lord bless us. Someone else made a choice in the 10th chapter of Luke, starting with the 38th verse. It says, "Now it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me." Well, you're supposed to be a hospitable host. You're supposed to do that. Back then, that was their custom. You know, they did a number of things. You know, when they walked, they came to your house. Part of their custom was to give water so you could wash your feet before you came in. Some of them had servants. They'd have their servants wash your feet before you come in. They were supposed to feed you well and take care of you. If anybody encroached upon you while you were under their roof, they were to protect you. That was all a part of being the host. That was why when the angels came there to see what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah, and Lot went out and closed the door behind him and told the men that, you know, please don't do this. These are my guests. Instead of you trying to molest them, I'll let you have my daughters. See, you look at that and you say, well, that's wrong. And it was, but it was their custom to do whatever they could to protect whoever was up under their roof that was a guest. That's part of what influenced his thinking. So Martha's doing her part, but you can also see that she was maybe getting a little too carried away. You know, she might have been better off to just make a few sandwiches instead of maybe having a 5-course meal to serve the Lord. But I could also maybe empathize with Martha in that she was no doubt considering, this is our Lord and Master, and I want him to have the very best of what I have to offer. And she put out a lot of effort. But she's also getting frustrated and upset that her sister is sitting there while she's walking around there, and maybe it was hot, I don't know. She might have been sweating and wiping the sweat and moving about and scurrying around and trying to get this done and make sure that's cooked just right and watching the timing of it. I don't want it to get overcooked, and I don't want it to be undercooked, and I want it to just be perfect because this is my Lord. And then while she's doing all of that and making all that effort, here's Mary sitting down looking up at Jesus, just listening to what he has to say. And she's like, what is wrong with her? She knows what I'm trying to do. Maybe they had even talked about it. And she's like, well, when he comes, we're going to do this and we're going to do the other. And Mary is like, I didn't say I'd do all of that. I'm sitting at his feet. And so she says, Lord, don't you even care? You see all of this? Like, well, if Mary's not going to wake up to what she needs to do, then look like the Lord could kind of help me in life. Say, well, you know, we can talk. Let her go ahead and help your sister. But you know the answer that he gave her. Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful. One thing is necessary. One thing is most important. And Mary had chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her. You know, to make that kind of a choice where it's something that people can't take away. I watched the way some people drive out here. I was looking the other day, and every now and then I'll kind of sit there and say, ooh, they really cut that person off. You know, you see some just cut right in front of them. I mean, don't hardly give them any space. Look like once they barely get their car here, they just jump right in, and the person's hitting their brakes and trying to keep from running over. And you look at those kind of things, and you consider that people get so caught up. And, you know, you could do that, and maybe somebody hits the back end of that person. Now they get all upset, regardless of the fact that they cut you off. They're all upset now because you done hit my car and you done damaged it and I'm going to sue. And you know something? You could be totally without fault and they could be totally at fault and could sue you and still take everything you got, it seems like, the way this world goes nowadays. But you can't take Jesus away. If you choose to have that part, they can take your life, but they can't take Jesus. They can take everything you own, but they can't take Christ. But you and I have to reinforce and maintain that choice day in and day out. You know, there were others who were called upon to choose, and yet sometimes maybe didn't make the proper choice. But as we go along this pathway, we're going to have to consider those places and those choices. Some of them are heart-rending. Some of them are very difficult to make. Some of them, even after you made them, you're still wondering, did I make the right choice? And you want to go back and revisit it, but yet you know I better not go back and revisit it, because if I do, I'll probably change my mind, and I know I really don't want to change. I know I made the right choice, but it's still hard for me to be convinced that it was the right choice. But you know, we must keep going, and we must continue in the ways of the Lord. In the 119th chapter of Psalms, the 30th verse, it says, I have chosen the way of truth. Thy judgments have I laid before me. I have stuck unto thy testimonies, O Lord. Put me not to shame. I will run the way of thy commandments when thou shalt enlarge my heart. In other words, I'm going to run towards you, Lord. I'm choosing to go that way, and I will run that way when you open up and enlarge my understanding and deepen my depth of love and continue to show me the virtues and the graces, because I've chosen this way. And you know something? The Lord does that. He helps us as we go along the way, and He will establish to us that this is the best way. You know, I've heard a lot of songs. And while we were singing, I thought about Brother Raymond Johnson. Brother Raymond was convinced that there were no other songs better than the songs in this book. I mean, he was convinced that there just wasn't any other song. If it wasn't in here, it just wasn't hardly it. Now, I'm not going to say that. There are other songs, and their words and their meaning have a lot of depth to them. But I find that many times you go to other places and hear what they're singing, and you begin to ponder, well, where's the depth to it? My wife's uncle, he calls them 7-Eleven songs, and he's out there in a Baptist church. But he calls them 7-Eleven songs. That means by him that they have 7 words to them, and you sing the same words over 11 times. You know, like singing the same verse over 11 times. And he himself has told me, says, it doesn't minister to me. He wants something that has some depth to it. And I found that, you know, he has one of our tapes, and he'll say, well, I can listen to that. It says something to me. And that's what these songs do. I remember one other person I know I worked with, he listened to some of the singing we did, and he said, well, to him they were more ballads than songs. But see, what they listen to, it's kind of like that. You know, it's saying the same thing over and over and over. And you can kind of, sometimes even me and my wife would be listening, you hear something, and they're just repeating a certain phrase. I think we were headed to Monarch, and we got in towards Oklahoma City, and I know they have a black gospel music station, so I started trying to see if I could find it, see what I could listen to. And they had some song came on, and they were just repeating it over and over and over. And she finally thought, okay, they can stop now. And once I saw what they were doing, I just started counting how many times they just kept saying it. And I thought, you know, but it isn't saying anything. And when you look and you consider this way, there's nothing better. I'll say that. There's nothing better. There are others, they preach a lot of things that are good, but there'll leave some loopholes for people to get through. I've noticed that time and time again. I've noticed the world sometimes will tell you that there's certain things now they've discovered is not good for you. And then I'll stop and think, They taught us that in Sunday school. The saints already know that. You don't have to spend millions of dollars to do this study. Just listen to what God has to say. It's the best way. And therefore, we ought to make that choice. Finally, in the same 119th chapter, in verse 169, it says, "Let my cry come near before thee, O Lord. Give me understanding according to thy word. Let my supplication come before thee. Deliver me according to thy word. My lips shall utter praise when thou hast taught me thy statutes. My tongue shall speak of thy word, for all thy commandments are righteousness. Let thine hand help me, for I have chosen thy precepts. I have longed for thy salvation, O Lord, and thy law is my delight. Let my soul live, and it shall praise thee, and let thy judgments help me. I have gone astray like a lost sheep. Seek thy servant, for I do not forget thy commandments." He chose the precepts, the ways of the Lord. He realized this is the best way. There were times when he felt like he had chosen to serve the Lord in vain. But when he would go into the sanctuary, let's put it in today's terms, when he would go to church, he would come out realizing that this is still the best way for me to go. It's the best way for all of God's children to go, is what he told them. When I came to know and understand, I could see that they will have their end, but it is best for me to stay with God. And he had to make that choice over and over and over and over again. He had to keep choosing to keep walking in the statutes of the Lord. You look upon it, you realize that David was tempted when he saw Bathsheba there on the upper roof there. Yeah. But you know something? After coming through all of that, do you think that Satan stopped trying to tempt him with other women? No. Come on, David. You're the king. Yeah. All you got to do is say, "Go get me that one." Yeah. And they'll bring her in. The parents will release her. No questions asked. "Oh, she's going to be wife of the king?" Like, "Oh, yeah, go." I'm more than sure he had those kind of temptations, but he kept choosing to follow God. To the extent that God testified and said, "He's a man after my own heart." To the extent that he could tell Solomon, "If you walk in your father David's statutes and if you live like he lived." And there were others that came along. David became a standard to live by. Because there were other kings that came along. And the writing says they did not follow the statutes of God as David their father. Even though he wasn't their literal father, but down to that lineage of kings, he was the standard. This is how you live. This is what you're supposed to choose. These are the kind of decisions you have to make so that that pattern is consistent and steady. And yet many times it says they did not choose to live as David their father. And then there were a few who did. And it says they followed in the walk of David their father. They had to make a choice. Some of them were kings, and Israel had gone out and been into idol worship and had their places of worship for these idol gods and had their priests to burn incense to them and do all these other sacrifices. And then here would come a new king. Now he's got to make a choice. Am I going to keep going that way and do like they've all done? Or what am I going to do? Some of them chose to stop that kind of worship, but they didn't take out the high places. But then there were a few that came in and they took all of that stuff out of the temple and burned it. All of them that were priests, they said, "You're not a priest anymore." And those high places up on the hills where they had the grove of trees and the temples built, they went in and sent their soldiers or whoever in, tear it all down. We're going to serve the Lord. But you have to make that choice. Pray for me.